good morning. KBOO Portland is your community radio station. At a minute before 9 o'clock on this Thursday morning, here's a look at what's coming up this morning. In a half hour, join us for Fight the Empire. Host Per Fogering interviews Mike Lofgren about his new book, The Deep State, The Fall of the Constitution and the Rise of a Shadow Government. At 10 o'clock, it's Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. And then at 10:15, Flashpoints looks at the Aliso Canyon gas leak disaster, stopping police killings, and the impending ICE crackdown on undocumented immigrants from Central America. At 11 on Between the Covers, we hear an interview with Paul Theroux on his latest travel book, Deep South, about his road trip through the backwoods of the southern United States. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, the guest is Carol McKay Booker, editor of Alone Atop the Hill, the autobiography of Alice Dunnigan, pioneer of the National Black Press. That's all coming up this morning after Press Watch. It's news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell right after this.
Tune in to the podcast Probable Cause This on the KBOO website, kboo.fm/probablecause. On this podcast, I look at the top stories on the lack of accountability for police and public officials in Oregon and across the country. That's kboo.fm/probablecause for a weekly roundup of stories on holding our public officials accountable to we the people.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Well, the latest headline, I'll just quote CNN on this. Paris on edge after weathering a year of jihadist violence faced a fresh scare Thursday as police shot dead a knife-wielding man on the anniversary of the Charlie Hebdo attacks. An image of the ISIS flag printed on paper was found on the man's body along with a handwritten note in Arabic from the man claiming responsibility for the attack. The Paris prosecutor's office said in a statement the office's anti-terror section is investigating. The man, whose identity is not known, was shot as he attempted to enter a police station in the northern Paris neighborhood of Barbès, bearing a butcher's knife and yelling, "God is great," the statement said. He was carrying a fake explosive device, it said. Okay, so that's the end of the CNN article. And I want to ask you to consider this news critically. So let me just summarize. So this is the anniversary of the Charlie Hebdo attacks. A man attacks what? A police station. Okay, a man attacks a police station with a knife. A man attacks a police station with a knife. Ooh, scary. No, it's not scary. It's not a fresh scare. It's just weird. Why? I mean, you know, there aren't that many places in Paris where you can find a group of armed men. But you can be sure that the police have some guns. So you attack it with guns, a bomb, anything but a knife. So this guy attacks a police station with a knife. That ought to just kind of make you stand up and say, what? Huh? What? So he has an ISIS flag. That means that he's, by golly, he's from ISIS Daesh, and he's a beheader, and he's terrible. And but he doesn't have a real ISIS flag. It's printed on paper. It's a printout. Okay, so that's found on his body, along with a handwritten note in Arabic from the man claiming responsibility for the attack. Yes, it was me. And I'm from ISIS. Look out. Here's my flag. So he yells, Allahu Akbar, and attacks with, and it gets even, it's like, is that not weird enough? He has an explosive device? No, he has a fake explosive device. Like, what, they don't sell Miracle-Gro anymore? He can't figure out how to make things go bang? So this is just very transparently a setup event. There's a very, very slight chance that this guy set it up. Maybe he just decided that he would sacrifice his life in order to make a, you know, non-scare, in order to very non-violently make his point for ISIS. This is just so unlikely. It's not like they, it's not like ISIS can't think these things out. So, I mean, it's not like anybody can't think these things out. It's like, what's going to happen when you attack a police station with a knife? Well, you know, maybe you're going to blow them up, and not with a fake explosive device. How's that going to work? So this is a propaganda stunt. I don't mind saying it's very obviously a propaganda stunt. And it's meant to impinge upon your consciousness, fade away into memory, and never be examined. But look at it. This is somebody. Somebody probably made a deal with this guy. Somebody somewhere. I would guess that someone he knows that he is related to is going to get asylum in order for sacrificing his life in this way to support the war on terror. And the war on terror is, of course, a war of terror. And this news is just bogus. So, now turning to other news. Washington and Seoul are in talks over possible redeployment of strategic nuclear arsenals and missile defense systems to the Korean Peninsula, withdrawn from the region in the 90s. Beijing sees the move as a direct threat to China's security. North Korea's alleged hydrogen bomb test on Wednesday has pushed the militaries of South Korea and the U.S. towards discussions about returning American strategic assets, such as nuclear-capable B-52 bombers, F-22, stealth fighter jets, and nuclear-powered submarines to American military bases in South Korea. That's according to the Yonhap News Agency, as reported on RT.com, Russian propaganda. And they say, they quote Won Yu Chol, senior lawmaker with South Korea's ruling party, saying, "It is time for us to peacefully arm ourselves with nukes." How do you like that phrase? It is time. Speaking of things that you should, things that make you sit up and go, huh? It is time for us to peacefully arm ourselves with nukes from the perspective of self-defense to fight against North Korea's terror and destruction. Yeah, he actually said that. The Pentagon's readiness, they write, to provide Seoul with every means for extended deterrence was declared in a joint statement by Defense Minister Han Min-kyu and U.S. Secretary of Defense Ashton Carter. There are concerns that Washington might use Pyongyang's latest provocative nuclear test on January 6th as a pretext for extending its military presence on the Korean Peninsula. South Korean Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman General Lee Sun-jin has already had consultations with U.S. Forces Korea commander regarding the issue of deploying the U.S. military strategic assets to the Korean Peninsula. And they write, the current American-South Korean military cooperation is based on the 4D principle, which stands for detect, disrupt, destroy, and defend. However, Defense Minister Han Min-kyu has spoken against bringing a foreign nuclear arsenal to the country. What could go wrong? Government maintains a position against the production of a nuclear weapon or deployment of those on the Korean Peninsula. And RT writes, apart from possible redeployment of nuclear deterrence to the Korean Peninsula, Washington is discussing the station of the Terminal High Altitude Area Defense Advanced Missile Defense System with Seoul, a move strongly opposed by Beijing, which sees deployment of the complex as proliferation of the U.S. military presence in the region. So there's more to that article on RT.com. This is Press Watch on KBOO Portland. It's 9:09 Pacific time. And coming up at 9:30, we're going to have Per Fagering, so you want to stay tuned for that. Turning to local news from an email by Portland Cop Watch. The hearing on the appeal filed by Teresa Holloway about the kettling of protesters at a Michael Brown support protest in November 2014 ended with a surprise outcome. The Citizen Review Committee voted 5-3 to say the commanders who ordered arrest that night were in violation of bureau policies because the orders were unconstitutional. And Dan Handelman writes, "My comment to CRC was that they should have sent the case back to find out who ordered the kettling." Presumably, he writes, they would then learn who had the announcement made that everyone present was under arrest and should step off the curb into the street when the police plan was to arrest people for standing in the street. So speaking for myself, kettling, in case you don't know, refers to a procedure for intimidating protesters in which plastic fencing material, you know, that orange stuff, is used to surround a group of people and immobilize them. For this reason, it is handy to bring a small and sturdy pair of scissors to protests. Very handy. Also helps to cut those wrist ties. Now, from, and that's me speaking, not Portland Cop Watch. Now, quoting Portland Peaceful Response Coalition, there's going to be a rally, an expanded rally, Friday, January 15th, not this Friday, but the 15th, at Pioneer Courthouse Square from 4:30 to 6. Here is the press release. Three wars, millions of lives, and 25 years later, the United States continues its military and economic intervention in the country of Iraq. Join Peace and Justice Works, Iraq Affinity Group, and Portland Peaceful Response Coalition in remembering the date that Gulf War Part 1 began in 1991 with an expanded PPRC rally Friday on January 15th, starting at a special early time, 4:30 p.m. at the Pioneer Courthouse Square at Yamhill and Morrison Southwest. And speaking for myself, I remember that day. I remember those protests. I remember seeing it coming in slow motion. I was one of the first people in the country to protest. I had already started doing press watch for a couple of years by then, a few years. And I could see that the story, speaking of propaganda, that that Saddam Hussein had massed tanks on the border with Saudi Arabia was made up. They made it up, and they were getting the people all, the American people all riled up so they would support this war, which from the very start, August 1990, I was out in front of the federal building in Austin, Texas, where I then lived by myself. And here we are all these years later. It's pitiful and horrible. But anyway, returning to the press release, in 1991, President George H.W. Bush gave Saddam Hussein a deadline of January 15th, Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday, to withdraw Iraqi troops from neighboring Kuwait. The next day, January 16th, the U.S. began one of the most intense bombing campaigns in history, eventually driving Iraqi forces out of the Emirate and strafing retreating Iraqi troops on the Highway of Death. The U.S., do you remember the Highway of Death? Did you ever wonder why the Highway of Death technique was not applied to ISIS? Anyway, the U.S. continued killing Iraqis directly through the through enforcing no-fly zones in northern and southern Iraq, and a bombing campaign in late 1998 was launched while President Clinton was facing impeachment. The unprecedented sanctions put in place after Iraq's 1990 invasion of Kuwait decimated Iraq, causing the deaths of at least 500,000 children, which Secretary of State Madeleine Albright acknowledged in a CBS interview, stating the price, this is a quote, "We think the price is worth it," end quote. The sanctions were finally lifted, for the most part, after the U.S. bombed and invaded Iraq by starting on March 19th, 2003, Iraq War Part 2, in a mission dubbed Shock and Awe. Thousands upon thousands of Iraqis were killed not only by U.S. bombing and invading forces, but by sectarian strife triggered by the killing of Saddam Hussein and the dismantling of the existing government. These actions led to the rise of both Al-Qaeda in Iraq and the Islamic State. At least 4,800 American soldiers died in the effort, which left Iraq in more chaos than it had been in before the invasion. Although most American troops were withdrawn in December 2011 and 200 remained, at least 200 remained in part to guard the world's largest embassy, the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad, which, speaking for myself, is actually, of course, an occupation palace and quite a grand one. Returning to the press release from the Portland, I was about to say Peace and Justice, it is the Portland Peaceful Response Coalition. In Portland, the Coalition Against U.S. Military Intervention in the Middle East rallied 12,000 people in Pioneer Courthouse Square on January 12, 1991, days before the war broke out. And that's not all of the news release, but I'll leave it at that. You're listening to Press Watch. The time is 9:15. Comments and questions, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. You may want to comment on some of these stories I've talked about. You may want to talk about Black Lives Matter. Sam is on the air. Hi, Sam. What's up? We'll try again and get Sam. Okay, I think we might have dropped that line, so you might want to call back, Sam. Now, another topic that I've been concerned about is, and over the last few weeks, is the fact that the candidate, the socialist candidate, Bernie Sanders, is being utterly shut out of media. And the way you shut someone out of media these days is you cover the other candidates with gross disproportion, and you only mention the candidate that you don't want people to think about every now and then. For example, when the Democratic race is covered, it is covered as a race between Clinton and Trump. But we haven't gone to the nomination yet. And Clinton is in quite the battle, may lose New Hampshire to Bernie Sanders. Oh, yeah, that's how close it is. So to counter this 10-to-1 and 20-to-1 media domination against Bernie Sanders, and in defiance and outrage, I'll just read from a few things from BernieSanders.com. Yeah, there's a BernieSanders.com. Did I mention BernieSanders.com? It's not like I can, you know, personally counter the media blackout. But I'll do what I can here for a few minutes. January 1991, Congressman Sanders voted against a measure providing President George H.W. Bush, Bush the Greater as he's known, with authorization to use military force in the Gulf War. "I have a real fear," said Sanders, "that the region is not going to be more peaceful or more stable after the war." Bernie Sanders, 1991. November 93, Sanders voted against the Clinton-era North American Free Trade Agreement. Returning from a tour of factories in Mexico, Sanders said, "If NAFTA passes, corporate profits will soar because it will be even easier than now for American companies to flee to Mexico and hire workers there for starvation wages." That was 1993. And, oh, look. July 1996, Sanders was one of only 67 votes against the discriminatory Defense of Marriage Act, which denied federal benefits to same-sex couples legally married. Sanders urged the Supreme Court to throw out the law, which it did in a landmark 2013 ruling some 17 years later. Oh, there's a lot more to that on BernieSanders.com, and I'll get back to it. But first, I want to talk to Sam. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Hi, Sam.
Hey, Teresa. Thanks for taking the call. Long-time listener. Hey, I got a burr under my saddle.
Well,
I'm really disgusted about the corporate press's coverage of the takeover in Burns.
Specifically?
Well, they keep sticking a microphone in the face of that failed rancher and letting him spew his message of hate for the government, and he ought to be in jail.
How do you figure?
Well, they're grazing their cattle illegally on the range in Nevada. They never quit, and they never paid any grazing fees.
Okay,
he's over here stirring up our people.
Are you near Burns?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I hear from the corporate media, and yeah, there's a lot to be said about that coverage. Of course, in the last couple of days, I've heard things on what I consider corporate media. I've heard on NPR. A little coverage which seems to broaden the outlook somewhat. Although I haven't heard anyone come out and say that it is blatantly white supremacist of that group of people to come out and say that the land always belonged to them, as if history just didn't happen at all, and as if white people are the only people that ever mattered.
Right. And there's no countervailing coverage of the conservationists. There's no those public servants that have been down there managing that refuge for since 1908. There's no coverage of their voice. There's no coverage of the thousands of volunteers and docents that teach little kids about wildlife. There's none of that. There's just that.
Yeah, well, thanks for pointing that out.
Okay. Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks for calling a number to call 503-231-8187. Yeah, that's Paiute land and has been for 13,000 years. And I will give credit to NPR and OPB for covering that angle of it properly eventually. Returning to my rant about Bernie Sanders, and once again, I'm reading from BernieSanders.com because he's being shut out of the press, and I object to this. And I think if there were a significant or intelligent candidate on either side of the Republican aisle, I would feel the same way. And that has happened before, actually. There have been Republicans who just haven't been conformist enough to get mainstream media coverage, or not in a big way. But in this case, Bernie Sanders is being shut out because Bernie Sanders is a socialist. He supports socialism and always has. And what do you know, there's a whole generation of Americans who, we forgot to teach to be afraid of socialism because we're done making billions of dollars for arms manufacturers by confronting the Soviet Union, which is gone since the early 90s. And now we pretend that there is a terrible threat from, you know, from fill in the blank. And right now it's ISIL, ISIS, Daesh. And before that was Al-Qaeda. And, you know, as I was saying before that, it was the commies. Anyway, returning to BernieSanders.com, about 10 years before the 2008 Wall Street crash spun the world economy into a massive recession, Sanders voted no on a bill to undo decades of financial regulations enacted after the Great Depression. That's the Glass-Steagall Act they're talking about. So I won't read the rest of it because it's a little too vague. But yeah, he voted against undoing the Glass-Steagall Act. That was in 99. That was from that jackass Texas senator. I'm trying to think of his name. But the House passed the bill 362-57 over Sanders' objection. October 2001, Sanders voted against the USA Patriot Act. October 2002, Sanders voted against the Bush-Cheney war in Iraq. He warns at the time that the invasion could result in anti-Americanism, instability, and more terrorism. That's a quote. Anti-Americanism, instability, and more terrorism. You think? I think he might have been right. June 2005, Sanders passed an amendment in the House to stop the government from obtaining library and book-buying records on Americans. Unfortunately, the amendment is later removed in bicameral backroom negotiations. Which, you know, bicameral backroom negotiations is kind of, probably should be the actual name of the U.S. government. It shouldn't be known as the U.S. government. It should be known as the House of Bicameral Backroom Negotiations. For example, locally, we have the city council, and I was really glad to see Sam Walsh in here with Joanne Hardesty, and they talked about a lot of things, and they may have spoken about this, but I just want to remind you. Article from OregonLive.com by Brad Schmidt says the city of Portland on Tuesday fined ride-hailing app Uber $2,000 for not reporting lobbying efforts by political consultant Mark Weiner. The fine is the first issued under lobbying rules adopted in 2005 to improve government transparency, and $2,000 is the maximum sanction Auditor Mary Hull Caballero can impose. Now, there's more to that article by Brad Schmidt in the Oregonian, but I have a couple of things to say about it. First, a lot of people said at the time that Uber was going to come in here with their money, and they were going to bankroll their way into breaking the local taxi services and setting up a system to allow them to extract money from the local economy into their billion-dollar bank accounts. And I said a couple things, maybe it'll be three things. Second thing is Uber is a Ponzi scheme. That's going to become more evident. All of you working for Uber, all of you investing for Uber, I'm going to be very sorry that you fell for this arrogant, nonsense, this worldwide attempt to extract local transportation dollars and suck them up into New York. It's going to hurt you. And the crash is coming soon. And the third thing that I want to say is that a fine of $2,000 is nothing to Uber. Absolutely nothing. Cost of doing business in a very, very small and laughable way. So we need rules for the city, state, and for our new revolutionary government that impose fines from percentages. Let's say a minimum fine would be 2% for such a violation of lobbying, violation of democracy. And the maximum fine would be confiscation and control thereafter by the people, which could lead to either a people-controlled institution, or in a case of an extractive and useless industry like Uber, it would lead to dissolution and destruction of the industry. Time is 9:25. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. And John is on the air. Hi, John.
Hi, Teresa.
What's up?
Hi, Teresa. How you doing?
Doing all right, thanks.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to thank you. You did a good job on the coverage of the Syria war. It's getting really rare these days. You know, a lot of people aren't covering it, especially the truth about ISIS is that, you know, who's actually behind funding it, and the war on ISIS being actually phony, which, you know, it was in the Saturday debate. Bernie challenged Hillary on, you know, her penchant for regime changes. That's what we don't like Hillary because of her Iraq, Syria support, her but neocon style, you know, bloodlust. So I was wondering, you know, why do you think Bernie Sanders would go along with the bombing of ISIS in Syria when he knows that the CIA primarily created ISIS, and that Assad's the real target, like Kucinich says. He's a member of the Ron Paul Institute. He knows that CIA created ISIS, and so that the real target is Assad. So why would Bernie go along with bombing Assad when he knows it's a legal war?
I'm glad you asked that, and I think I have just enough time to address it. Bernie Sanders, I think, I don't know, and I have to kind of read his mind given who he is, what his history is, and my assessment of his intelligence and his loyalties. And it would be something like this. Maybe without quite exactly thinking of it directly, he realizes that the president isn't the president and hasn't been for a long time. That's why he gives out bird whistles, like when he says the Saudis should be taking care of more things. Now, there's nothing about Bernie Sanders, socialist and person who stands up for the people, that equals anything with the Saudi regime of horror and theocracy. And you know, it's a, for God's sakes, it's an autocrat regime. It's royalty. It's a king. So Saudi Arabia is the opposite of the standard that Bernie Sanders would presumably present. So when it comes to this sort of issue where the Pentagon is absolutely in control and it really doesn't matter, for example, Obama coming in said he was going to close Guantanamo. Well, the military doesn't want to, and the military gave him the finger and continues to do so, and he can't close Guantanamo because he doesn't have the power, because he isn't really the president. The president is the Joint Chiefs of Staff when it comes to that sort of thing, and Bernie can't budge them, and he knows it. So in order to get to be president, which is really the person who sets the flavor for the Republican, you know, bicameral corruption regime, he will have to avoid certain subjects or to go soft on them, and that's what he does. And he's kind of hoping to be the quote, end quote, president. So, yeah, it only goes so far. And I really appreciate your car. I really appreciate your call, but the music has started, which means I got to get out of here and make room for Per Fogering, who's ready to come in the room. So I just want to say thank you for listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM from our beautiful transmitter on the West Hills and other frequencies in Cascadia, and via the World Wide Web, KBOO.FM. Pull it up and find our new app. Listen on your smartphone on the new KBOO app, KBOO.FM, and in that matter, transmitting abroad to all the ships at sea.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the We Real Cool film series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month is Nacho Drum, showing Thursday, January 21st at 7 p.m. Released in 1993, Nacho Drum is a French documentary about the Romani people's journey from Northwest India to Spain, consisting primarily of music. Again, that's Nacho Drum, Thursday, January 21st, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. This is Per Fagrang, and the show is Fight the Empire. And my guest today is Mike Lofgren, who he's for almost 30 years. He was a staff person on Capitol Hill, and he had written two books about